Hello, everyone. Hope you can hear me. Let me know if the sound is good. I'm trying a new setup once again. I have my old mic back because this mic doesn't require me to talk into it directly for the sound to be good. But, of course, this mic doesn't really pick up the guitar, so I have a different mic for the guitar, but I have to mute this mic and switch to the other mic to make that work. And let me know if you can hear both things. So this is my talking mic and that was the guitar mic. Something needs to be louder or less loud, let me know. So just if somebody can post in the chat sound is okay, then I know I can start. I see no one complaining, so I think both sound good. Thanks. Okay, let's get started. I want to try one thing because I have this device that should be able to put messages in the chat. Let me see if it works. Okay, that doesn't work. Okay, because I had this automated message, but I have to try it again. I didn't put something wrong here. There it is. Okay. You see that message in the chat? If you want to send me a message, because this goes wrong every time, and I will post this from time to time, you have to tag me, like exactly like Pablo just did, and like I put there, and I will answer those questions at the end of the stream. If you want to answer, if you want me to answer directly, then you have to do a super chat because that will light up really big. So you don't have to do a super chat, but that's the only way I will see it. But if you want to answer me. If you want me to answer a question at the end of the stream, then please tag me. Because if you don't tag me, then I will miss it because there will be too many messages for me to see it. So, I'm going to react to a vintage or classic video by Barney Kessel. And I was researching this week, watching videos about ear training. And of course, there's tons of videos on YouTube about ear training. It's a whole culture on YouTube or a culture, it's a whole department of YouTube with hundreds of videos about ear training in all aspects of music, for composers, for improvisers, for rock guitar players, for jazz guitar players, for classical players. Of course, I was mostly interested in ear training for jazz guitar players or for maybe for jazz musicians. And that's because I have another view on ear training than most people. And let me just say before we start that I realize that my opinion on this matter is out of the ordinary. It's not the average opinion, or I even want to say it's my opinion is far away from every other opinion I ever heard about it, because I myself, I don't really believe that ear training is all that important, because I think that all the ear training you need will come from practicing jazz guitar in the way that I do it. So transcribing solos, or you don't even have to transcribe it yourself. Just get good transcriptions and practice those phrases on backing tracks and pay attention to the sound and the timing and listen a lot to jazz records. I think that's all the ear training you need to play. That's not to say that you can get better ears than that, right? Maybe you want to hear the most complicated chord and pick out all the notes. Of course, that is a goal in itself, but I don't think it's necessary. So this is just my opinion. I realize it's not the mainstream opinion. I just assume, because this is such a polarizing topic, that everything that I'm either I don't understand it, or I'm misinformed, or I'm strawmanning. Just everything I say, just think of it as that. And then if I say something that you agree with, you can be pleasantly surprised. But mostly what I'm saying is just, it's wrong. It's not correct. I'm wrong. And I know that, but I can't change it. You can't control what you believe. This is what I believe. I can't help myself. I need to be someday maybe I'll see the light. So, there's a couple of videos I might want to take a look at. But I want to start with this Barney Kessel video. Of course, Barney Kessel is one of my favorite jazz guitar players. I think he was a real genius. He brought something new to the guitar that you didn't hear before. Great chord melodies, great solos, great sound. There's a couple of albums I really love. He made an album with Grappelli, which I really like. Of course, the Paul Winners with Shady Man and Ray Brown. It's a great album. I don't want to say a perfect player. I don't think he was a perfect player like Wes, for example. But he was a very interesting, creative, and interesting player that I really love to listen to. So even if I don't agree with everything he says in the video, that doesn't take anything away from my admiration for Barney Kessel. And I've transcribed a couple of solos by Barney Kessel, and I probably will do a Barney Kessel month at one point on my channel. So let's take a look at this video. Let's head over to YouTube and see what we can find. Okay, this is the wrong video. Let me go to the right video. You like that little stinger? It took me 4 hours to program that. But I think it's cool. Okay, so let's start at the video at 140. Before that, he's just introducing the video and he is tuning the guitar. Right? Like the old videos say, let's tune everybody. And then you have to tune because you have to maybe play with him. Okay, let's start and let's see what happens.
I'd like to discuss a very important thing, and that is how to develop the ability to play what you think. This is something that every great improviser has. If you can't play what you think...
I see now that not the complete video is on the screen. Let me see if I can correct that. Yes, that is better. Okay, here we go.
You're reduced to playing formulas and licks and devices. Can't play what you think.
Let's scroll back a little bit.
I'd like to discuss a very important thing, and that is how to develop the ability to play what you think. This is something that every great improviser has. If you can't play what you
think... Now, this is very interesting because the video is titled Playing What You Hear. And also in the rest of the video, he talks about hearing lines and playing them. But here he says to play what you think. Now, could be a miss, could just be a slip of the tongue. But, or... it could be that that is what he usually does, because that's what I do, right? I play what I think. The chord is E7, and I'm thinking, oh, my hand is in the middle of the guitar neck. Let's play an altered phrase with my finger around the fifth of the E7. All right, and I go up with a diminished arpeggio. Let's play some F minor at 9. Right, I don't really think F minor at 9. I think I'm just saying that now for clarity, but I'm thinking about this fingering. Right, I'm playing what I think. That's exactly what he said here, playing what you think. But that's not what the video is about. But again, he's probably just made a slip of the tongue. But it's interesting that he said that.
You think this is something that every great improviser has. If you can't play what you think, then you're reduced to playing formulas and licks and devices and patterns that you see on the fingerboard. And this is very mechanical and very plastic, and it has no energy, has no spontaneous feelings, no creativity. So it's very...
Also very interesting, because... So he says then you're reduced to, and then he names a bunch of things that he probably feels make you sound like plastic. But here's the thing, right? I transcribed a couple of solos by Barney Kessel, and to me, most of the lines I see there, they make me think of licks, either because they're based on bebop cliches or they are patterns. For example, in a solo on Jordu, where the part where it's D7, he plays... that's just a pattern that he shifts down and then he plays... that's also a pattern. Now, you could say, well, those chords are very complicated, so maybe he had to do that. But it's just one example. There's many places in, for example, the Paul Winners album, this Jordu song comes from there. Listen to the solos and most of the phrases, and they are great licks. And I would say they're typical Barney Kessel things, but then again, a lot of them are based on bebop cliches, so I don't really understand why he says being reduced to those things, because I suspect he's using them himself as well.
Very important that you develop the ability to play what you hear. And there's
so he said twice, play what you think, and now the rest of the video, it's play what you hear.
Steps involved. One is to develop the ability to play what you hear, and the second is be sure that what you hear is worth playing. Because just because you can play what you hear doesn't mean that it has any real musical value. So those are two things to keep in mind. Now, the technique that I wish to tell you about right now is to...
Playback. He said it's
because you can play what you hear doesn't mean that it is creativity. So it's very important that you develop the ability to play what you hear. And there's two steps involved. One is to develop the ability to play what you hear. And the second is be sure that what you hear is worth playing.
Okay. Also interesting. I missed that the first time I watched this video, because I watched it one time before, of course. The second point is to have something worthwhile hearing. But how do you get that something worthwhile hearing? How do you get something in your head that you hear that is, let's say, that sounds like jazz improv? Because not everything sounds like jazz improv. And what it is exactly, you can make rules about that. There's research about it. But, for instance, we could say if you play power chords, that's not like jazz, right? No jazz guitar player did that. Or if you play lots of bends in the minor pentatonic scale, that's probably also not very jazzy. There are these rules. But how do you get these rules, if you can call them rules, in your head, right? By listening to a lot of jazz. But jazz is fast, right? How do you get that precisely in your head? How do you get the precise lines in your head? So I could think of two ways. The first way is that you start searching for all the lines. And once you got a great line, but how do you know it's great, right? How do you know that? Then you remember it. Or the other way is you actually transcribe some solos and look what great players like Barney Kessel play, right? This is great stuff to play on Jordu. You can't really hear the guitar, but because the guitar is not audible. But if I switch the microphones. That is a great line to play on Jordu, right? But now I know that, so I could use that on other changes. Maybe there's another song that uses those same chords, or maybe I just play the first part. Now I know it's a great line, and now I can experiment with that line. I might even hear that line, but why am I hearing it? Because I transcribed it. And the difference between me hearing it after transcribing it and then playing it, or just remembering where my fingers move and remember the chord symbols, I'm not sure that that difference can be really pinpointed in a player. So it's interesting that Barney Kessel says that, because the rest of the video, he doesn't mention that again, like that you have to have something in your head worth hearing, because of all the stuff he has in his head is, of course, worth playing. But how did he get that stuff?
Just because you can play what you hear doesn't mean that it has any real musical value. So those are two things to keep in mind. Now, the technique that I wish to tell you about right now is to think about striking a chord on the guitar without intellectualizing it, without naming the notes, without naming the name of the chord. Just play a chord and savor the harmonic sound of the chord, very much as though you were in a kitchen and you're smelling something that is just very delicious and it smells great, it's just going to be a great meal, and you just take in this aroma and experience it without analyzing what it is. So you play a chord.
Okay, here's a question for all of you. If you play guitar, is it possible for you to play a chord without knowing what it is? I'm not even talking about the name, just like in which song it, this chord is, or how, when you use it? Is it possible to just play a chord without knowing? I wouldn't be able to do that, right? If I play that, I would know, oh, that's a G chord, right? It's a G6. It just, that's the shape my hand has to take to play that chord, right? And I could play anything I want. I just know it's a B flat. So I don't really understand what he says. Well, if you have another guitar player playing it for you, okay. But how can you play a chord yourself without knowing what it is? Even someone like Stoccolo that doesn't know the name of it would still know that if he plays this chord, that it's the first chord of Coquette, right? And immediately if he thinks about that, 40 lines pop in his head that he has played before. So that's already a difficult task, to play something on the guitar and you don't know what it is. So you have to play, do something very weird. But what's the chance that that is really something nice? I don't know. That's already a weird proposition, I think.
And you listen to it, you listen to the tonality, and let something in your mind, in your imagination, well up that is a statement, a musical line that you wish to hear in your mind that is somewhere between 6 to 9 notes in length. And the reason I say 6 to 9 notes is, in my estimation, if it's less than 6 notes, it's not challenging enough for you. And if it's more than about 9 notes, then it's something that if you were not to find it immediately on the guitar, you might get lost because you wouldn't remember a very long line. So somewhere in there is a pretty good amount of notes. So you imagine this line of music. Try to make it something in your mind that you create that is not a scale and is not an arpeggio, but it is very much a melody. That is, it has a rise and a fall, as good melodies do. It's something that you could sing and get great satisfaction from singing this melody. It's something that you could add words to. It's melodic rather than just a scale or exercise or etude. So,
of course, I agree with that sentiment, like a scale or arpeggio is not musical. But then again, how do you get a line in your head, like you said in the beginning, that is worth playing, that is musical? You need some baggage for that. You need some knowledge of jazz to make it a line that is actually suitable to play on in a jazz improvisation. Let's say you come from, you are a Baroque player. You play Baroque cello or something, or Baroque oboe. And I play a chord for that person. Do you think he's going to come sing something like, no, he's gonna think of something like this. Something Baroque, but I mean, not something that necessarily would fit if we start playing Hungaria, right? It might still fit, maybe that's a bad example, but I'm saying there's no way you can come up with a line that you know will sound good on a jazz song if you're not familiar with jazz in an intimate way. Right, because this is difficult. He's saying to come up with a line that you're not going to play the guitar. That's a difficult task.
We strike a chord, and we imagine in our mind something. First thing is we imagine it in our mind. And then we, after internalizing it or hearing it in our thoughts or in our mind, we then externalize it by either humming or singing or whistling it. And I give you all three choices because many people say, well, I can't sing, so then hum, or I can't hum, then whistle. But in some way, you externalize this thought you had. Now, when you've externalized it, you have stated this both within yourself and outside 2 times, and now you're ready to find it on the guitar. Try to find it somewhere.
By the way, I do agree with singing a lot, but here's the weird thing. I actually don't really care about which notes you sing. I care more about the rhythm and the timing and the inflections and the phrasing, right? If I say to you, could you sing, let's take something very recognizable, sing Ornithology, right? And you sing, not every note was correct in there. I wasn't even trying. I couldn't even do it. I don't have control over my voice in a way that I could sing all those notes. But you'd still recognize it because you hear the rhythms, you hear the right accent. Right? If I would sing ta to do da da di di da do di do do, I sing all the correct notes, but that's not ornithology. The other one is much more ornithology than the second one, and the second one had all the correct notes. So what is more important? More important is the correct tempo, right? Sing it in a reasonable tempo, the rhythms, the swing, the phrasing. So when I sing, I always talk about singing when in my videos about timing, because then it's important, I think. If you want to practice something to swing, let's say I want to play something like this. Then I would, let's say it's new to me, then I would sing that first, but not for the notes, because those notes are very complicated to sing. I would sing it for the rhythm. So I would imagine the rhythm section or beat on 2 and 4. Right? And I'm paying attention to the rhythm. I'm not paying attention to the notes at all. My fingers will take care of the notes, but I have to take care of the rhythm myself. Right, my fingers move to the right fret and the right note will come out. But to have control over the rhythm, I actually have to move my fingers in a certain rhythm. And to feel that, to not have the barrier of moving your fingers, which is difficult, to feel it, I sing the rhythm because there's no barrier between me feeling it and me singing it. Okay, let's continue.
Somewhere near the nut of the guitar, somewhere in the first position of the guitar. And as you gain familiarity with finding more and more lines in the lower positions of the guitar, then try to find them in higher positions, in the same key, and then moving to other keys. But you try to later to find as many different positions on the guitar to play that same little melody that you made up. So I'm going to do one for you right now. I'm going to play a chord. I'm not thinking of what the chord is, the name of the chord, the notes in the chord. I'm just going to savor the chord and let something come to my mind that I think would fit, that would be in agreement with this chord. And hopefully it is a melody rather than an exercise. Now I hear it in my mind. I'm going to externalize it by whistling it. Now I'm going to do another one.
That was a great line. Of course, that is a typical jazz line to play, right? It's just, that's something you play on G7, on G major 7, based on a G major 7 arpeggio, with a 9 this time. It is, by the way, an arpeggio. He just said, don't think of an arpeggio or a scale, but it is an arpeggio, although it goes up and down. And I still think it's a great line, but it is an arpeggio. And I'm sure he played that before, like every jazz guitar player has played that before, because it's a standard jazz lick. Great one, though.
I'm going to find one that's a little more challenging, a little more difficult to hear. I'm going to try to find it in a lower position.
Okay. A minor, right? That is a standard bebop lick. It's from the bebop scale. A great line, of course, but I'm sure he has played that one before. I mean, I've played that one like a million times. So it is a good line, but I'm sure that line is not... He still heard it, but I hear that line too, even though I would not say I play what I hear. I play what I know, what I think of, and I would think of that line for A minor. It's a great line.
Now, sometimes you will notice I'm closing my eyes. When you close your eyes, you can hear much better. You can also hear your thoughts better. You can hear what's in your mind better when you close your eyes. And you can also hear music better when you close your eyes. So sometimes this helps. Keep that in mind. Now, as I played this, I tried to find it on the guitar. If you do not find every note right away, don't get discouraged. Don't go back to playing these licks. Don't go back to playing the formulas and these patterns that you see on the fingerboard. But remember, the only way to get good at making up something is to make it up and keep making it up.
But the thing is, though, it's the same thing he said in the beginning. It's very consistent. But the two things he showed now are actually two licks, two patterns, two things that are easily movable, especially the first one. Right, that's a good lick for G, and you can just move the guitar. So I don't really understand why he then played those two lines. I assume, actually, this is honestly what came to his mind, but I hope if you are a jazz player, you can see that these lines were not licks, right? They were still licks, and they were very well-known licks. Played by Wes Montgomery, played by Django, played by Barney Kessel.
And not get discouraged. And if you make a little mistake, so what? You do it over again, and each time you'll get closer. And finally, you'll reach a point where it almost seems as though it's simultaneous, although it's just a very short time span between you thinking about it and being able to play it. I'm going to try to think of something, whistle it, and play it at the same time. Now, it's not exactly the same time, but it's so fast that it almost seems as though it were the same time.
Okay, so this is an important point because I prepared something for this. So he said that at one point you get so good at this that it almost becomes the same time, right? You whistle and you play the same time, but that's an illusion because he's whistling it right before he plays it. That's what he said. It's so fast, this connection is so fast that it seems like it's the same time, but it is not the same time. It's right after the whistling.
That's the idea. And when you get to that point, you will have really mastered the first step that's necessary.
Okay, so this is really the video. So when he did this last demonstration, let's watch it one more time, and then I'm going to go to something that I made. So, again, so he's going to whistle and play at the same time because the connection is so fast that it seems like it's the same time, but it's not the same time, right? He says he's whistling right before he plays, but it's so fast.
Same time. Now, it's not exactly the same time, but it's so fast that it almost seems as though it were the same time.
Okay, now, so when I saw that, I doubted that it was really happening what he said. So what I did do, what I did is I recorded this with my computer and I slowed it down to 10% and then I slowed that down again to 10% of that. So let's go to that. So here we have that line that he whistled, right? But it slowed down, it slowed way down. So 10% of the video, and then that slowed it down 10%. I don't even know how that is, how much it is. And this is the last part he played. Now, the first two lines, they are typical bebop lines. And you can go back to this yourself. Basically, he's playing every note before he's whistling it. Because if you play a note in guitar, it will consist of two things, right? It will consist of an attack. The attack and the note. So the note will always be later as the attack. That's how a guitar works. When you mix audio, you can take the attack away with, for example, a compressor, and you do the attack very fast, so the attack is gone almost, and you only hear the note. Or you can raise the attack. It's a separate part from the note. Now, let's listen what happens when you slow that way down. So this is the last line. In the beginning, some of things are really at the same time. He's never earlier with the whistling than the playing. Listen, this is the last line. Okay. So two things I noticed. Almost every note is earlier than the whistling, right? And sometimes it seems to be together, but the attack is earlier than the whistling. That basically means that he's playing before he's whistling. So that also means that he's whistling what he's playing, not that he's playing what he's whistling. And that's exactly the way I would be able to do it, right? If I play this line, I know it sounds, and I could do, but I'm not playing when I'm singing. I'm singing when I'm playing because I've played that line so many times. Another thing you notice is that he's not whistling the same notes he's playing. Listen one more time. Okay, that is a completely different note. And this is consistent, right? Sometimes it's in tune, but sometimes it's not in tune. So you could say, well, it's just not in tune. But here's my question. If you hear a line in your head and you're not able to sing it in tune, but you're able to play the right note on the guitar, what is happening there? You're obviously not playing what you hear in your head because you're whistling what you hear in your head, right? If you can't whistle or sing what you hear in your head, why are you singing it anyway? Something here is not adding up. And this doesn't take anything away from the genius that is Barney Kessel as a guitar player. Because again, I have great admiration. And I truly believe that he believes that this is what's happening. And at one point you become so good at improvisation and it feels so natural that there is no distinction anymore between what you studied and what you think you hear. But here's the question: is what you hear based on what you studied, or is what you hear based on what you play, if you studied that, or are you playing what you hear? I'm saying that most people, I'm not saying everyone, because I can't say that, but at least Barney Kessel, based on this demonstration, is actually not playing what he hears. He's whistling, so he's hearing what he plays. But it is so fast, like you said, that it seems at the same time. But it's not the way he said, like the hearing comes first, the playing. It's exactly the other way around. It's the playing and the hearing. And if you don't believe me, do it yourself, slow it down, and check it out. And you will see that this is the way it works. Yeah, and of course, in those times, they didn't have the technology to do this. But now it's very easy to check those things. And that is my point. So if you know that, if you know, okay, a great player like Barney Kessel is obviously not playing what he hears, but he is playing stuff that he worked out. I'm not saying he worked out his solos, but like practicing things, practicing licks, practicing concepts. You don't have to practice licks. You can practice concepts, practice ideas, practice like embellishments, and you get this great creative swinging solos that Barney Kessel plays. Then if it's good enough for Barney Kessel, then it's good enough for everyone. The problem, though, is if you get a teacher like Barney Kessel and he says to you, no, you got to work on hearing stuff and then playing it, I'm afraid that many people will fail at that because that is obviously much harder to do. And I have a lot of doubts if it's actually possible to do that in a reasonable amount of time and then also get good at guitar technique and sound and swing. Things that are much more important actually than the notes you're playing. So, okay, I'm gonna go to another video that is related to this, but before that we do that, I'll check some questions. Bill Williams, I for one came to the same opinion as you about ear training after many, many years. Okay, yeah. I wonder why that happened, but good. I haven't met many people that came to the same conclusion as me. Most people really stress the importance of ear training. Now, I'm not actually saying that Barney Kessel was talking about ear training here, but it's related, and we will see that in the next video. Pablo Cardona, I think what happens is that at least in the U.S., solfège is part of the whole music education package, also known as sight singing. You have to be able to sing sheet music. Yeah, but I teach at the University of the Arts Rotterdam, and there it's also obligatory. And I mean, I think it's not really useful. I'm not saying that I think it's useless. it obviously trains a skill. I'm just wondering if you need that skill to play great jazz solos. And if that's your goal, to play great jazz solos, then you might waste a lot of time trying to get good at that if you're not naturally good at it. And that time you could better spend on trying to get a good timing, because that's way more important and in the end probably way more difficult. Okay, Ingmar says, you get this back... Oh, no, sorry, that's not... Pablo Cardona. If you guys want to ask him something, yeah, tag him. Okay. Pablo Cardona. Isn't this what Chad Limburger does when he sings like a trumpet while playing the same thing a third or a sixth lower in the violin? Yeah, that is amazing. Of course, Chad's a good friend of mine. He has the complete opposite opinion on ear training than I have, and we are still good friends, and he knows my opinion, I know his opinion, and we make jokes about it, and obviously that's his thing, right? Ear training. Now, I have to say, Chad is one of the most creative players I know. He plays lines that are completely unpredictable. So if there's one person that I would believe, okay, he's actually doing that, it's Cha. So you could say, okay, but that's what I want. Yeah, but Cha's a genius. Are you a genius? I'm not a genius. Most people are not geniuses. So you could still aspire to it. But I would say, first, just learn how to play well. Just you show up at the jam session, you can always play a good solo. It doesn't matter the song, the key, or... tempo, because I still remember Cha, like maybe 8 years ago, when he was still in the development of being able to do this on violin. He was already able to do it on guitar, and he would often fail at playing something coherent, and he would notice immediately, of course, because the connection was not there yet between what he heard and his fingers on the violin, especially not in the way he plays. Like he uses very difficult fingerings, and it's the complete violin neck, which is amazing. Yeah, now he's able to do it, but he already knew he was able to do it from the guitar. I think most people, if they would go that route, they would get really frustrated just because they wouldn't be able to actually reach a good level. So I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm saying it might not be the best idea for most people. But most people are not as gifted as Cha, even though I don't really believe in talent like that. But let's say Cha is extremely talented and gifted, and most people aren't, me included. Ben Bloom Guitar says, it seems more to be an exercise of feeling the state of flow. What do you think? What, you mean my exercise with singing the rhythms? Yeah, I agree with that. And Pablo says, I think it is something like you get such a good relative pitch that you can basically transcribe what appears in your head, kind of like a recording. Yeah, that is also possible. But I still think when you talk about, like, I can transcribe without an instrument, but it's easy for me because I just hear the notes. But if you talk about improv, I really think that if you play a line, like the way I practice, right, I play a new line like hundreds of times on different songs. After I've done that, that line is stuck in my head, right? Even if I would try not to get it stuck in my head, it will be stuck in my head because I played it over and over and over again. And if I'm lucky, I might actually be able to play it in improvisation. That's an even harder thing, right? Because then you have to play something new in between things you already know. But if I succeed at that, that line will never go out of my head because I played it so much and then I was also able to actually use it, and that line will be stuck. And I can always sing it, and I can always hear it, but that's because I practiced it. Renato says, I believe that everything that we improvise, we already have played before, but in a different context. I agree. Last question. Pablo Cardona. Do you think it might in part be because Cha is blind, and therefore his ears are way super developed? Yeah, that could very well be, but of course there's also blind people that are not musicians. So, I mean, I wouldn't say that's be the reason. I think him being blind is the reason that he really tries to get other people to use their ears more, right? And I talked about him, I talked with him about that. I remember jamming with him, and I was tuning my guitar, and I was tuning it like this. With a tuner, of course. And he said, are you using a tuner? I said, yeah, because he knows if you're not doing stuff like, or that you're using a tuner. I said, don't use your tuner, use your ears. And I said, Chaya, I can use my ears, but the chance that I will actually have a tuned guitar are very low because it's difficult to tune a guitar. It's just difficult. It's weird. So I say, we have a gig, right? Do you want me to play with an untuned guitar? Or do you want me to just use the tuner for 30 seconds and the guitar will be in tune? I'm just more practical. Okay, let's go to another video. Now that we're talking about ear training, let's go to this video I found. I found many videos about ear training, but I want to go to this video. So this is from the channel Learn Jazz Standards, which I actually I didn't encounter before. It's pretty big channel for a jazz channel. It's 133,000 subscribers. That's great. So I actually don't know a lot about the creator of this channel. He's obviously very knowledgeable and makes good videos. I couldn't find any videos on the channel where he's playing. That's not what his channel is about. It's more educational, right? Like my channel, but I always make it a point to play a lot because I want people, because my teaching style is weird, so, right? So I want people to know, okay, he can play, right? If they like my playing, they might be more inclined to listen to what I have to say. So he made a video, and this video is called Why Jazz Musicians Should Work on Ear Training Fundamentals. And it's interesting what he says. Of course, obviously, I don't agree. That is not to say that I'm right. I'm probably wrong, but let's explore it.
Many jazz musicians and aspiring jazz musicians know that they need to develop their ear in order to improve their improvisation skills. But oftentimes I hear students and teachers talking about how the...
This video is a little bit loud. Let me turn it down. Okay, start again.
Many jazz musicians and aspiring jazz musicians know that they need to develop their ear in order to improve their improvisation skills. But oftentimes I hear students and teachers talking about how the fundamentals of ear training are not important. When I talk about fundamentals, I talk about hearing intervals, hearing chords, and hearing chord progressions. And they kind of dismiss that and just say, go straight to learning things, you know, from recordings and stuff like that. And while that's all good, I want to make a strong argument.
Hey, that's me. He just described me. But I would always say skip training intervals, skip chord progressions, skip, what else did he say? Something else. Just go straight to transcribing. That's me. But how old is this video? Well, anyway, I'm sure he's not aware of my channel. Like, I have a tiny channel. But, he was describing me. But it's funny that he said that because I actually haven't heard many teachers say it. So maybe it is me. Maybe he is talking about me. I don't know. I think his name is Brand. Brand, if you ever see this video, if you're talking about me, let's talk about it. Let's go come on my channel. Let's have a discussion. That would be nice. I'm completely aware of that your opinion is the mainstream opinion and my opinion is the weird, wrong opinion. So I am aware of it.
For why the fundamentals of ear training are important for you to spend your time on, let's get after it. Hey, what's up? Brent here. I'm the
jazz
musician.
Hey, I got a super chat. Oh, it's from Squid3D. Only just started the stream. I'm sure I'll disagree at some point, but until then, clickbait all my friends. Thank you, Squid3D. Yeah. Funny, the thing with the clickbait. I love clickbait. I fall for it myself all the time, and I love coming up with the clickbait ideas. And I think people are starting to see that I'm just joking, right? It's a joke.
Behind the website learnjazzstandards.com, which is a blog, a podcast, and videos all geared towards helping you become a better jazz musician. If you don't want to miss anything going on this channel, make sure you subscribe below if you haven't already, and you'll be locked into everything that's going on here. So I do hear from teachers sometimes online and elsewhere that they don't think the fundamentals of ear training are necessarily important for musicians.
Okay, maybe he is talking about me because I haven't heard anyone say that online, and I've now watched hundreds of videos about ear training, and there was not one that didn't say that ear training is the most important thing. So maybe it is me. Or maybe there's some other people online that say that I haven't found them yet.
To spend a lot of time on. And I want to talk about today not only how I fundamentally disagree with that, just in my own opinion, but also why I think the fundamentals of ear training are important to help us develop our jazz improvisation skills. Now, the big argument that I always hear...
Notice, he said here, fundamentals of ear training. That's an important thing to remember. Fundamentals of ear training.
Usually comes around the topic of intervals, learning how to hear your perfect fifths and major sixth and, you know, descending and ascending intervals. And I hear a lot that, well, they're just not musical. Why would you do that? Because when you're improvising, you're not thinking, well, I want to play a major ninth and then let's go, you know, a perfect fourth below that. You know, people don't think that. And I totally agree with that. But when you say things like this, you're ignoring what actually fundamentals are important.
Okay, he switched to saying fundamentals here. He didn't say fundamental ear training anymore. He was now talking about fundamentals, and here he's making what they call a, what do you call that? When you switch terms, there's a word for it, but I forgot it. But it's actually a fallacy where you use the word fundamental of ear training, and now he's starting to talk about fundamentals of playing jazz, which is totally not the same thing. And everything he's saying after this is actually about the fundamentals of playing jazz. It's not about the fundamentals of ear training. Because if you talk about the fundamentals of ear training, yeah, then I would agree. Yes, learn your intervals, learn your chord progressions, learn to hear the chord, learn to hear chord progressions, because that is the fundamentals of ear training. But it's not the fundamentals of jazz.
So, you know, when I was in high school and actually my entire life until I went to college, I was a hockey player. I played hockey. My parents are Canadian. And one of the things we'd always do in our drills every single week was stick control. You know, we work with, you know, moving the puck in between your stick. And we would also do skating drills, you know, things that are technically basic to the sport and being able to play it. And we did that every single...
So I agree, right? If you are a hockey player, even though I don't know anything about hockey, but I can imagine because you are with the stick on the ice all the time and you have to control the pick, draw the puck, that puck control or stick control is very important. But again, that is the fundamental of ice hockey, right? And if ice hockey is the equivalent to jazz, then we were talking about the fundamentals of ear training, not of jazz. So... can I make a comparison of this? Let's say first he was talking about, let's say that ear training to ice hockey is the same as knowing the statistics or knowing the statistics of your opponent's team, right? Let's say that it's not the same. It would be more like theory. But let's say that is it. And then first we'd say, well, the fundamentals of statistics is that you learn all the categories of statistics. And then 2 minutes later, I say, but the fundamentals, it's important to know that because, and then we're talking about stick control. That's not, it's not the same category. One is ear training, statistics, and the other one is actually playing the sport or playing jazz.
Practice. And the reason that we did that is because when it came to actual performance, to game time, we wanted to have those skills so flawless, so natural, that when we actually go to implement that stuff is just working in the background. We don't have to think about that.
The equivalent to jazz would be technique, right? We will drill technique. We would... All those technique exercises I was doing on live stream, that would be the stick controls. And that would be working in the background because you don't want to be thinking about technique when you are trying to play a nice improvised solo. This is not equivalent to ear training.
That stuff. Or if you're more like a basketball player, I mean, basketball players do lots of dribbling drills, lots of different fundamentals.
Dribbling drills. Yeah, that is very fundamental, right? Because you are on the court dribbling with a ball. When you get the ball, you have to dribble. You have to do that all the time. Of course, that's fundamental to basketball. But remember, we were talking about the fundamentals of ear training here, not the fundamentals of jazz improv. There's a switch.
that really help their game when it comes to performance. So when we talk about fundamentals in general, we're talking about those things that should be moving on in the background, like intervals, like chords, like chord progressions. If we have those fundamentals down, then we can actually go and create music, not think about those things. But those are...
Yeah, see, I'm repeating myself again, but there is a switch here. Fundamentals of ear training are not the fundamentals of creating music. I can be fast about the fundamentals of creating music. It's things that you can't go beyond, right? It's the start of music. It's a start of, there's nothing beyond it. It's a fundamental. So technique would be one, right? If you don't have technique, you can't play at all. The second one would be knowing tunes. If you don't know any tunes, you cannot play the music. You have to know a tune. And then maybe... what else would be fundamental? Well, the rest, if you know a tune and everything that comes with knowing the tune, right? So you have to know the chords and the theme, maybe. Depends if you're a bass player, then probably not. And technique, then you can, that's the only thing you need. Everything that you do after that is a decision, right? So ear training would be a decision. It's not fundamental. Learning Charlie Parker licks would be a decision. It's not fundamental. As long as you can play the theme and know the chords, if you're a chord instrument, and you have technique, you have the fundamentals down, and everything after that is a choice.
The solid foundation for us. Kind of saying like intervals are, you know, not worth your time, you know, they're not musical. That's kind of like saying you shouldn't learn your scales because they're technically not musical. It's true. Scales aren't musical. Should we use scales to improvise? Not necessarily, but we definitely should use them to learn how to play our instruments. So we should think of intervals in the same way. They're the fundamental building blocks that we can use. Now, the second thing I want to say is for those...
This is also not very coherent because... he said scales are not the main ingredients for improv. I obviously agree with that. But it is good to learn how to play your instrument. And I can agree with that too. Although on guitar, I think that's not really necessary. But on violin, yes, it's necessary. Why? Because violin has no frets. So learning scales is a very structured way of navigating the fretboard, practicing your tuning to play in tune. On guitar, you could basically do anything. If you can do arpeggios, or you could scales, or you could just do licks, that's all the same thing. It's about moving your finger to the right fret. There, you don't have to play in tune. But then he's making that comparison with ear training. I don't see that, because one, it is fundamental, right? Technique, you could all, but the second thing, like what he's saying now, like having intervals fundamental, fundamental to what is... I don't even understand why hearing an interval would be fundamental to what exactly.
Those who are teaching that you shouldn't work on your fundamentals, the problem with that is that completely ignores beginners and those who really don't have strong ears already. You have to start somewhere. You really have to find the starting point where you can hear a pitch and then hear the difference between one pitch and the other. And
Okay, you want another starting point? Here's a starting point. Sing that note, right? If you are able to sing it somehow, like it doesn't have to be perfectly tuned, that's enough. If you can sing like a little melody. But again, I care more about the rhythm, right? It would be weird if you can't find this note at all singing, right? Maybe that would be kind of strange. I still think there's a chance for you to be able to play, but it might be more difficult. You might not enjoy it that much. But that's the only thing you need really for ear training, because like I said, the rest of the ear training will come by listening to jazz, playing phrases and solos, over chord progressions, jamming. Your ears will develop to the level it's needed to be able to pull that off. Again, I realize my opinion is wrong. It's not correct. It's just I can't help myself. Just assume I'm always strawmanning or... I'm misunderstanding.
Understand exactly what those relationships are. And if you can do that, then you can start building chords, then you can start building chord progressions. And this is bringing me to my main point here, which is if we know intervals, like for example, if I can sing a major third up, da, da. Okay, if I can sing that major third, then I am almost on my way to being able to sing a major triad. Do, da, da. Okay, and from a triad, I can start seeing a major seventh chord. Do, da, da, da. Right? I can now hear that chord. I don't need an instrument to play it for me. I can...
Okay. He was actually singing an A major seven. But, okay, so you can sing this. Good, right? How often is a guitar player going to play this exact forcing? This is a forcing I don't use. I use this forcing for. Or this one. Or this one. Or this one. Try singing that. It is so difficult. I couldn't even sing it. The range would be too big. I couldn't even sing that if I wanted to. So, and now imagine me playing. There's no way you're gonna sing that. What's the use of being able to sing this? It's like the most basic voicing that nobody's gonna play. Now, this one you might play, but singing the really juicy jazz voicings is gonna be so difficult. Somebody that can do it is, of course, Rick Beato's son. He can do that. But it's very... And he doesn't even play guitar. So, okay.
Hear that. So, if I learn my intervals, I can start hearing chords. And if I start hearing chords, I can start hearing chord progressions. So, for example, if I want to sing a 2-5-1 chord progression... Da 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 da. Now that wasn't the most beautiful singing, but you could hear me singing the arpeggios to a 2-5-1 chord progression. The bass notes were going do da do, and I was able to sing a minor seventh chord followed by a dominant seventh chord, which is the 5 chord, and then a major seventh chord, which is a 1 chord. Now we could start doing that with all kinds of.
Okay. Again, so those voicings, right? So that I wouldn't even know how to play those voicings, right? So B minor 7, he was just playing. So it would be this. And then you have to go to E7. So. Now, okay. Let's say... you have an audition for your band, right? So you need a guitar player, and two guitar players come in. And they say, okay, let's try play a 2-5-1 to A, right? And the first guitar player says, okay, let's do it. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Let me switch to the guitars. And then the second guitar player, he plays this. Which one are you going to hire? The second one, right? But now the first guitar player says, no, wait. Before you hire him, listen what I can do. I can do da do do da do da do da do da do da. I can actually sing what I just played. And then you would go, oh, I didn't know that. So you, and then said, can you sing what you just played? Can you sing all those chords? And let's say that guitar player is me. I would say, no, there's no way I can sing all that stuff. It's like, okay, sorry, man. Like, he could sing those basic chords, so I'm going to hire him. It makes no sense, because the thing that you want to play, you can't really sing. You cannot really sing this. There's no way you're going to sing that. And how do I get that? Am I hearing that? No. These are all like chords that are transcribed from people, right? The Peter Bernstein. Peter Bernstein. Stoccolo. I don't know. But like, that's all chords that I transcribe from people. And there's no way in 100 years that somebody's going to sing all those chords. So if you can't sing those chords, why would you sing those basic chords? What's the use? I don't understand it. But again, there must be a reason that I'm not seeing. I just don't know what it is. Because I would always ask myself, why would I want to do that? If the reason is, so now that you can hear those chords, yeah, but those are not the chords I want to play.
The different chord progressions, but I don't actually have to play my instrument to hear that stuff. Therefore, when I listen to recordings and I want to learn a song by ear, I'll be able to hear that much better if I can recognize those building blocks, those foundational ear training elements to be able to hear that music. So
yeah, but nobody's going to play those chords, so you would never hear that, because I don't care how good your ears are. There's always chords I can play that you can't hear. Except for when you're Rick Beato's son, Dylan Beato. Of course, he hears everything. But like very good jazz musicians, like Stokolo, would never be able to hear that those things, right? I could play like very complicated things. Doesn't matter who you name. I'm sure there's something that I could think of that they wouldn't be able to hear. There's a million things that I wouldn't be able to hear, because there's many times I had to look at the video because I couldn't figure out what they were playing. Like this chord, for instance. I talked about before, this chord, I had to actually look at the video to see what Peter Bernstein was doing, because it was just too much information for my ears to really pick it out. Now, I probably would have gotten it if I would have sat there for like 15 minutes, but it was just much easier to look at it, and now I know this really cool chord.
Everything around the fundamentals will help us grow our ear. And yes, we need to be coupling that with just learning things by ear. Try to play melodies by ear. Amy Nolte does a really great job of talking about just being able to play basic songs. I'll go ahead and link that up in the card if you want to check out that video. But, you know, we need these fundamentals of ear training. I think it's really important for us. So the next...
Now I switch back to fundamentals of ear training. And then I would agree with everything. But that's, of course, if your goal is now I want to be like an ear master. I don't know why you want that. Although I think nowadays on YouTube that'd be a good video. So it's you could hear everything. That's actually pretty good channel. But if that is your goal, I want to be this ear master. Yeah, you have to. Then you have to, of course, do fundamentals of ear training. But if your goal is, I want to be able to play a great solo on Cherokee, then it's better to learn to play nice 2-5-1s for the bridge in voicings that actually sound good, then play those, play the basic voicings that you will never get a gig.
Next time you hear, it's not worth learning your fundamentals, I would encourage you to think about that twice, to really invest the time in those things, and you're going to be headed on the right foot. You're going to have a huge advantage. All right. So if you want to go further with this.
Okay. That's the last thing. So, no, you won't have a huge advantage, because I've played with highest level jazz musicians, like people, famous people, like much better than me, that couldn't hear shit. And I'm not even kidding, right? I've seen that so many times. Like for me, it's very easy to hear stuff because I have perfect pitch, right? So you play something for me, I will copy it immediately. Not on guitar, because I have trouble finding the notes on some of the strings. But on violin, yes, no problem. And I know, like great jazz saxophone players that like play circles around me, they couldn't do that. They could do it, but they had to search. They make a mistake, right? You play something like, and they play like, no. No, this is a weird example. They make a mistake. They would search for a note, but then they would get it. Like I would get it in like 2 seconds. They would get it in like 6 seconds. Who cares? You know, they still get it. They're not unmusical, and they would recognize that pattern from other things they know, but they wouldn't be 100%. And I'm not making this up. I've done many gigs. I'm not going to name names, but I've played many gigs with people, with other guitar players, and then we would play... it could happen to you, and then I'd say, can you play the theme? And so, oh, I never played the theme before. But I try. And then there would be so many mistakes, even though they play a great solo after it. That's because they've never played the theme before, and they wouldn't know exactly where to put the fingers. So that's not something to be ashamed of. That's completely natural, because that's not the thing that counts. The thing that counts is, can you play a great solo, right? Or if you have a concert and you have to play the theme, of course, you have to learn the theme. And they're going to learn the theme in like 2 minutes. but they won't be able to do this on the spot every time. So anytime you waste on that, trying to get to that level, which is pretty hard to do, you could have better spent on the things that are actually necessary for you to get a gig. Okay, last thing. This is a long video, or it's 8 minutes, but I just want to watch the first part of it. So this is Tim Collins. I don't know him, but he's a great musician, like really great vibraphone player. I've checked some stuff, like amazing stuff. And he also plays drums, I think, and piano. And he has amazing ear training skills. So let's watch a little bit of it. This is amazing stuff.
Hey folks, my name is Tim Collins. Welcome to my channel. And in this video, I'm going to show you some ear training techniques that I did not learn in music school. Just in case you're wondering, no, I don't have perfect pitch, and I don't want it either. When I decided I wanted to become a professional jazz musician, I also decided that I wanted to be able to walk on stage anytime, anywhere, and very quickly figure out what was going on, even if I didn't know the tune. Basically, there's one...
So, this is what he says. Anytime, anywhere. Now, that's a bold statement, because I can think of a situation where I'm pretty sure he wouldn't be able to get it. And that's probably when he would go to a gypsy jazz jam with rhythm guitars. Let's say there's no bass, right? And I have a gypsy guitar, but there's no microphone. Let's say he comes to a jam, right? And he doesn't know the tune, and it sounds like this. I'm pretty sure he wouldn't get that because, you know, you don't really hear those chords, right? It's just so muted. And now you hear it even more than on a gypsy guitar. And now imagine like four guitars doing it and like they're playing different voicings and they're shifting the chords around. You're never going to get it. You know, who would get it? I would get it. You know why? Because I just look at the guitar. It's like, oh, it's C7. Oh, that's A7. But for instance, when I was playing a gig with Quinn Bichant from Canada, he has a way of voicing all the chords that is super weird, right? Like, I play D like this, right? That I would say, oh, that's a D6. Somebody would play it like this, but he played like this. It looks super weird. So I was doing a gig with him, and then he was playing a song. I couldn't get the chords at all, because every chord he played with a different D, like he plays like this is for him like D7. It just throws me off, because I am depending on those visual cues. So... that goal that he has, that Tim Collins has, is very lofty, but I don't think it's really realistic. Now, of course, if it's in the settings that he used to, yeah, it might work, but not every setting. You're better off, I'd say, if you want to be able to do that in a gypsy jazz setting, then just learn the shapes of the rhythm guitar, which is not that hard. If you want to do that in a contemporary jazz setting, then learn the notes on a double bass, like learn to see where the notes are. And especially if it's the theme they play in two, you can actually get it. Or learn a left-hand piano voicings. You start recognizing them also after a point because they all sound the same. And you can just look. I can just look at the piano or the guitar player or the bass, right? Because I play those instruments and I see, oh, it's a 2-5-1-2-F. I just need a little. And that takes a lot less time, I can tell you. And when the song is very complicated, I'm not going to get it, but nobody is, or very few people are. Like, if it's a song like Dolphin Dance, I don't think even somebody like Tim Collins, you can see he has great ears, would get Dolphin Dance without knowing it. It's just too weird.
One question that I needed to be able to answer within a split second. How does my note fit with the chord that I'm hearing? So I came up with the following practice techniques. Number one, common tone chord singing. Okay, I'm gonna sing a C, but then I'm gonna make that C become different parts of all different kinds of chords. Follow along. It's the root of a major chord. Do, do, do. Okay, now it's the third of a minor chord. Do, 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 do. Now it's the third of a major chord. Do, 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 do. Now it's the fifth of a major chord. Do, do, do.
This is what I want to show. This is the same problem. Like, okay, he goes much further. He's like, he has amazing ear skills. But if you show up to a gig and say the chords are C, C6, A minor, F major 7 or something, and you start playing, they say, okay, thank you. Don't call us. We'll call you. You're not gonna play those voicings. So you're training your ears to hear those basic triads that you're never gonna play, right? Because people expect you to play. They expect you to play something like that, something tasty like that. But so try singing that. That's gonna take you. So to get the skill that he has, it's gonna take a couple of years. But then to get to this level, that's going to take you so much time. In the time, you could have become a very good jazz solo player by just focusing on transcribing solos. That's it for this stream. So I'm going to end the stream by answering some questions. And I hope I didn't offend anyone. So Tim Collins or Brent from the Learning Jazz, if you ever see this video, I don't mean any hostility. I know that your opinion is probably the correct one and mine is the wrong one because I'm the minority. But I really wonder what the point of it is for myself, right? Because I'm able to play pretty good jazz solos without being able to do this. And then you say, yeah, but you have perfect pitch. Yes, but I don't have control of my voice to sing that. And also, my perfect pitch stops at this G, right? As soon as you play F sharp, I don't have no idea what it is. I don't hear those notes. So it's a great perfect pitch for melody recognition, but it's not so great for chords. So I'm not able to do the stuff that Tim Collins is doing in this video, but I'm still able to play good jazz solos. Now, he's also able to play good jazz solos. So I wouldn't say you don't need it. He would say you need it. But if he can tell me, or somebody cannot tell me, the direct application of that skill on the guitar neck, let's keep it to guitar, then I probably wouldn't ever bother learning it. Okay, let's watch some comments, if there are comments. Where did we stop? Okay, this was the super chat. Okay, here is picking stone. Agree to disagree. Yeah, but again, I'm in a minority, so you can disagree with me, and I'm probably wrong. For me, at least, training my ear changed how I absorb everything. Even when I create etudes to learn new concepts, I use my ears and go to the piano first. Yeah, but okay, I can see that. But what are you doing exactly with your ears? Because, like I said before, I'm not saying you should have bad ears. I'm saying that all the ear training you need, all the ear training you need, you will get just from interacting with the music in such a way that you're busy with the guitar. Because there's only one way to get better at guitar, and that's actually practicing guitar. And practicing ear training will make you better at ear training, not necessarily at guitar. Or I'm just going to say not at guitar, because guitar playing is difficult. Technique, timing, sound. If you're a gypsy jazz player, vibrato, how difficult is it to get a good vibrato? I'm still not happy with my vibrato, but it's a lot better than it was. Ear training is not going to help me get a good vibrato. It's not going to help me get good timing. It's not going to help me get good licks. No, I need other sources for that, and I actually need the guitar for it. But agree to disagree. Jos Dirkstra, doesn't it all come down to whatever works for someone is the right way? That's what I always say to my students. Yes, of course. But sometimes you do something that wasn't necessary to do, and you still get there. So, for instance, If you don't know how to play chess, I'm going to teach you chess, right? So I'm going to teach you how all the pieces move. And then I'm saying to you, okay, but it's also very important that you read the biography of Bobby Fischer and Kasparov and like these 10 biographies, very, very, very important, right? And in the meantime, you're reading all these biographies, takes a long time. You have to write essays about it. And then you're also learning openings and end games and like these puzzles. So you become a very good chess player. Now you might start thinking, you know what, that reading of those biographies was essential. But there's another guy that I also taught, and I didn't tell him anything about the biographies, just the other stuff, and he becomes equally as good. So that proves that the reading the biographies was not necessary, even though you or player A might have thought so because he was taught that. And that's the same for me here, right? I can play a pretty good jazz solo on, let's say, Donna Lee, and I haven't done ear training, which I really haven't done. But then there's another guy, he can also play an equally good jazz solo, and he has done ear training. That just shows that ear training wasn't necessary in that case, but the other work was. Bill Williams, a category error, the term you want. Yeah, maybe. No, I was talking about where you use a word in different meanings, but that was maybe also not exactly what I meant to say. But yeah, let's go with category error. Yeah, maybe that's it. Equivocation, but maybe that's what, but that was not it. Ray Bart, I'm confused because at Samoa I have regularly picked up progressions by ear. You struggle to see the chords jamming at night. Dolphin dance, probably not. But I'm not saying that there are. So I was just pointing out that Tim Collins probably wouldn't be able to do it just because he's not, well, I'm not sure about that, but I can guess that he's not really familiar with gypsy jazz. But of course, if you're a gypsy jazz player, then you start recognizing the sound of the rhythm guitar and you could pick up the chords by ear. I could probably do it if the song is pretty easy, but it's just much easier for me to look at guitar players. And yeah, you can create a circumstance where it's very difficult. Like it's pitch dark, you have headphones on, and somebody's shaking you. Of course, you could always come up with a circumstance where it's very difficult. I'm saying, should you do years of ear training to be able to deal with that circumstance? Or can we look at the average? Because jamming in Samoa, for instance, it starts at like 10 in the morning, and it will be light until 8 in the evening. So that's 10 hours, right? And then maybe you jam until like maybe 12 midnight, right? So that's 4 hours. So you have to be able to then hear all the chords because of those 4 hours that you can't see them, even though you're playing the same songs that you were playing in the 8 hours before. Of course, this is kind of a ridiculous example, but I would say work with the 20-80 rule, right? Work on the 20% that gets you 80% of the way there. And I think ear training is in the 20% that wouldn't get you the 80% there. I'm saying that correctly, but okay. What I'm saying is practice something with great effect that has the greatest effect on your job as a jamming musician or a gigging musician. Pablo Cardona, do you think your approach works on other instruments like the piano and the violin, or just in the guitar because of the way it's built? Well, especially on guitar because the way it's built, right, with the frets. For instance, on violin and piano, I think that a little bit more theory is important just because it's not easy to modulate on a violin and piano. You can't just say, okay, oh, A flat major 7, oh, here's E-flat major 7, just shift it around. So you need more theory. I'm still thinking the ear training is not that important because I can see why, but you know, again, somebody may point it out and then I have to agree if they can demonstrate it, right? If somebody can do something that is only achievable through ear training that is actually useful as a jazz musician and that I also want to be able to do, then of course I would change my mind. But remember, I teach at the university and I'm around people that have done ear training a lot and I've never seen anything like that until now. So it's probably going to be very hard to convince me. For me, Ben Bloom Guitar says, for me, it's easier to figure out the changes of a tune by ear than by reading them or somebody telling me the chords. I get very confused. I can't simply listen to the tune. I can figure out the chords to a tune also by listening to it. Just listen to the bass notes, right? I figure out the bass notes. And then because I know how jazz tunes work, or like 2-5-1s, and I just figure it's very easy to figure out the chords to a tune. But could you figure out the chords to, let's say, Naima, But and you cannot stop the recording. You just you play it once. Could you then play the chords, or Dolphin Dance, or any song by Wayne Shorter, or yeah? Could you do that by just playing it once? No, it's probably not. Probably you get a lot wrong, right? Because it's difficult. And there's even more complicated stuff. Could you do it with Jacob Collier? No. So in the end, you have to stop the recording and then listen very closely. Or if it's a tune that's in the iReel, you could just look at iReel. It's, oh, it's C7. Okay, nice. Oh, they're playing this really weird C7 chord. That's why I wasn't hearing it. Off topic, what's that white pick? I was expecting the green Dunlop pick. No, this is a Wegen big city, yeah. Oh yeah, Jan says that. Okay, last question. Ray Bart. Ear connected me more deeply to the emotional content of music. Yeah, that's probable. That's possible. But I know lots of people that are not musicians that are very emotionally connected to music. They wouldn't be able to tell the difference between minor and major. So I don't think they're less emotionally connected than somebody who did ear training. They're still, of course, it doesn't mean that they wouldn't get more emotionally connected when they do ear training, but there's also tons of people that have very good ears that are not emotionally connected to music, right? For instance, I'm sure there are lots of metal players that have very good ears that don't like jazz. So there's no connection there. You start liking jazz when you listen a lot to jazz and start understanding the music and how it works. And there's also lots of, I know, like people that are geniuses with their ears in classical music that hate jazz. Even though they understand everything that's happening, they just hate it. They just hate the whole, like they don't get the swing and they don't get. I think you could get more emotionally invested with ear training, but I don't think it's necessary. I think the bigger effect is from listening a lot to music, to a certain kind of music. For instance, I don't really like opera. I just don't really like it. I got a little bit more used to it, but I'm not a big fan of it. It's just I have trouble with the vibrato of especially sopranos. It just bothers me. So I cannot really listen to opera. I can listen to the overture, right, when there's no singing. But I love, for instance, Edith Fitzgerald, right, and Billie Holiday. So, and I can listen to that all day, right? So even though I understand both music and I've studied classical music theory and I've listened a lot to classical music and I have a degree in classical music, I still don't like opera. You should bring Tal Limburger on and talk to him about this in your channel in depth. I have done before, but maybe we'll do it again. That would be interesting, yeah. Okay, guys, I'm going to say good night because it's evening here. And I saw Nathan Borton in the chat. Hey, Nathan, how are you doing? I hope you all saw the video I did with Nathan. It's a great channel. Go subscribe there. And subscribe to my channel. And if you're interested in my book, you can buy my book. Here, I put a message in the chat. I have a button for it. I'm going to end the stream with a short commercial for my book. So you can, if you don't want to see a commercial, you can shut off. You can turn off this live stream. And then I'll see you all next time. Thanks for watching. Bye. Okay, that was not smooth. I should have gotten the commercial before I said bye. Here it is. Okay. Bye, everyone. Hello everyone, you just listened to a jazz guitar solo on the chords of the tune Ergin. If you are a guitar player and you always wanted to play jazz but had no idea where to start, I have a solution for you. I just released a book called The Van Hemert System, which describes the system I used myself to learn how to improvise, like you just heard. The methodology is completely based on learning a couple of shapes across the guitar neck that will enable you to improvise on every jazz standard you can think of. Of course, it's gonna take a while to become proficient at playing those shapes and how to apply them, but you don't have to learn anything else. No music theory, no scales, no arpeggios, no fretboard identification, no ear training, just learning those shapes and how to apply them. That's what I did myself, and you just saw the result. If you are interested in learning to play jazz guitar like that, and you are in the US, order my book in the web store of jungleguitars.com, and if you are in Europe, send a mail to this email address. Bye.